free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Thursday, April 3rd, 2014, and we are joined today by Anna Martin, otherwise known as the Libertarian Homeschooler. She's got a huge Facebook page, the Libertarian Homeschooler, of course, facebook.com/the Libertarian Homeschooler. And even if you're not so interested in homeschooling, I think you'll find this an interesting conversation, because I want to ask questions like, do you think it's okay to have a libertarian curriculum for your kids, or do you feel like then you're indoctrinating the kids and that's not fair and so on and so forth? So we're going to talk about all kinds of questions like that. And then at the end, I've got some announcements that I think you guys might be interested in. But right now, let me welcome to the program Anna Martin. Anna, thanks so much for being here.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
I've got a bunch of things I want to ask you that I think some people who might be on the verge of trying out homeschooling would want to ask. And I bet they're the same kind of questions you get again and again. But it'd be nice on my program, where we haven't really talked about homeschooling, we haven't devoted an episode to it, to record those answers, to get them down once and for all. So let me start, though, with some background about you. How long have you been homeschooling, and how many children have you homeschooled?
Well, I have my two sons, and if you count, that my oldest is 13, you could say that we've technically been homeschooling since he was born, because there wasn't any time that we said, okay, now we're going to start homeschooling. So we've been homeschooling more or less for 13 years.
Okay, so you're not a case where there was some horror show at the local school and you just said, that's it, I'm pulling these kids out.
No. I knew well in advance of having children that we were going to be homeschooling. In fact, it was one of the first things that I said to my future husband when we went on our first date. I said, I'm going to be homeschooling any children I have. So if that's a problem, we should just make this sort of like a, we should go Dutch. I knew well in advance that we would be homeschooling.
So why? What's the main reason or main couple of reasons?
The first reason, when I was younger, I really wanted to build a better beast. I've said that before. But it's true. I was looking to make someone who would be stronger, faster, and would get to the same place, but younger and better. But as I was homeschooling our older sons, and particularly as our second son sort of began to get older and more aware, it became clear that we were going to have to do something different, because what we were doing with our older son, which was really pretty rigorous academically, wasn't going to work for our younger son, so we had to figure out something different for him. And at the same time, we realized, okay, this academic model for our older son, he's doing it because he loves us. But what he started doing is memorizing, regurgitating, and forgetting. And that really wasn't what we wanted him to do. So we had to sort of scrap everything that we were doing and begin again. And we started to follow his interests more. And what we found was he was still getting what he, quote-unquote, needed, but just in a different way. So that's really what we did. And that's still how we homeschool. Does that answer the question that you asked?
Yeah, I think it does. Now, what do you say to people who hesitate because they feel like they're not smart enough, that if they sent their kids to school, there would be experts there who would teach their kids what their kids need to know, but my kids are going to need some advanced material somewhere down the line, and I'm not qualified to impart it to them?
Two things. The first thing is, the big secret about homeschooling is it changes the culture of the family, and it changes it in a really good and powerful way. And what happens is, as you are teaching your children and trying to figure out, okay, what do they need now? What is appropriate for this age? What are they going to need when they get out into the real world? You reintroduce yourself to these concepts. Maybe you felt really rusty about, and you become much more interested because you're coming at it as an adult, but you're also teaching it, so you really have to own it now. And the culture of the family changes. You become much more intellectually fierce and also intellectually fearless. And maybe that's not the culture of your family right now, but once you start homeschooling, something changes, and you become sort of a different person intellectually and academically. So who you are now and who your children are right now, particularly if they're in school, that's not who's going to be there even a year from now. So yeah, you may feel like you're not qualified, but it's coming.
Wow, that's a bold statement. You know what I was expecting? I was expecting you to say, well, there are a lot of options that you have out there to bring in tutors, and the internet has a lot of resources on it. I was not expecting that answer.
It happens, and that's why it's a big secret. Nobody expects this to happen. People are scared, and they say, gosh, you know, I didn't even graduate from high school. But what happens is you've got skin in the game now. You want to teach your children. You want what's best for them, and you do whatever is necessary to educate your children. And the person who has the will to do that is the person who is qualified.
All right, but let me just raise the objection on everybody's minds. I don't know calculus, and I'm never going to know calculus. And no matter how much I love my kids, I'm never going to figure out calculus.
Sure, and you don't have to. If calculus is not something that you want to do, for me, it's German. My son is a musician. He wants to learn German. I really don't want to learn German. so I'm going to find someone to teach him German. I can find someone on the internet. I can find someone in my town. I can find another musician to teach him German. There are lots and lots of different options. So many options now that weren't even available, you know, 5-10 years ago. You can do calculus on the internet. You can find a calculus teacher sitting in Hawaii waiting for you. You can do calculus at your community college. You can do calculus with a soup to nuts curriculum. You've got so many options.
You know, you mentioned learning German. I just can't help mentioning when I was in grad school, I got the bright idea that I wanted to learn how to read German just because I thought that'd be a cool thing. Right. So over the summer, I took a German for reading knowledge course over at Union Theological Seminary because it was right near Columbia. And it was full of theologians who wanted to be able to read Martin Luther in the original German, and then just me, like just some guy. I just figured, well, I'll learn German. German is like the hardest. I mean, it makes Latin look like Spanish. I consider Spanish the model language because it's
right.
Every word is pronounced exactly the way you would think it would be. It's got very consistent rules in how it works. I love Spanish. German is just horrifyingly difficult to learn.
Well, so, and thank goodness I don't have to teach it.
That's right.
You know,
isn't that wonderful? Yeah, you've been liberated from this. Yeah, I wanted you to appreciate just what a gift you've been given in not having to do that. And I mean,
I don't have to learn German.
I mean, no offense to the German speakers out there, and I'm going to get some emails. Believe me, say no. German's very logical. Yeah, it is logical, but it's so weird the way the sentences are structured. Look, this is I'm getting completely off topic here. When somebody says, I think I'm interested in homeschooling, I think I'm ready to take the plunge, but I don't know what step one is. What's step one?
Boy, it depends on the person, but usually what I suggest is getting to understand the child. And pedagogically, I'm a Montessorian. I think that the work of Maria Montessori, the work that she has done on the child, is really sound. I can always rely on the work of Montessori to give me a really good idea of where the child is in terms of needs, capacities, development. That is so helpful. But the other thing that she does that might be even more important is she tells us how to observe our children, how to be with them, and how to really look at them and see what it is that they're doing without sort of our overlay. It's almost like observing a creature in the wild. You're looking at them and you're thinking, oh, well, they must be doing that because, and you sort of have this preconceived idea about why they might be doing whatever behavior. But really, it's something different. And if you observe over and over and over again, you get a better idea of what the truth is. And that's one of the most basic things about Montessori is she teaches you how to observe, and that is so critical in homeschooling, to observe your child. So that's where I would start. I would start with Montessori. I'd begin with maybe the secret of childhood or the absorbent mind. The absorbent mind is a little bit chewy, but there also is another really good website out there for the beginner. But that's where I usually tell people to start there.
All right, that leads me to a question where we might have some disagreement, but I don't want you to say what you think I want you to say. And you don't strike me as the type to do that anyway.
No, I won't do it, sorry.
What I gather from what you're saying here is, well, first of all, I don't want to just gather. Do you favor the so-called unschooling approach, or how does that differ from a Montessori approach, if at all?
It really doesn't differ significantly from a Montessori approach. In fact, something that made me feel really good, I was at a conference with Montessorians last summer, and somebody that I really respected in the Montessori community said to me, "So what are you doing with your boys?" And I said, "Well, we're really sort of following them at home. We're following the child at home." And she said, "Oh, you're unschooling." And I thought, yeah, but I don't really want to say that, because that brings a lot of baggage with it. The word unschooling, unfortunately, has a lot of stuff attached to it. So, we unschool in the sense that we follow our children. I think people get the idea that you're unschooling, you're essentially leaving them be to their own devices. And really, nothing could be farther from the truth.
Well, I'm not so sure, but I think there are some things that could be farther from the truth than that. How do the kids learn multiplication tables if they're being unschooled?
Interestingly, there's a story. My 9-year-old son, not too long ago, I came to him and I said, "Okay, I just want to see where you are with math. And so can I give you some addition to do just to see where you are?" He said, "I already know addition. Can you test me on multiplication instead?" And I said, "Sure." And so I drew him a multiplication chart with, 1 through 10 on the top, 1 through 10 on the left-hand side, and he filled it in. I have not taught the child multiplication, but he knew how to do it. So now, remember, I went to college. I have little letters behind my name. This to me is scandalous. I did not expect this. I really thought the child needed to sit down with me and learn his multiplication tables. So this to me has come as a really big surprise. I don't know exactly how this happened, but he's showing me that he does things on his own without telling me what he's doing. And then I just come back and I sort of check. And it sounds like voodoo or magic. But that's exactly what it looked like when I drew this chart on the whiteboard and he filled it in. I thought, who taught you this? How do you know this? I don't know where that happened. But he's around us doing math all the time. He's around us while we're reading all the time. He's around us while we're even, because we're really, really geeky. He's around us while we're diagramming sentences and thinking about music. And he does a lot of music, so maybe that has something to do with it. But he's around us learning all of the time, and he just seems to absorb a whole lot.
All right, well, back up a minute. When you say when you're sitting around diagramming sentences, that does sound like you're imparting instruction. I assume your family doesn't diagram sentences just for fun. That does sound like a structured educational...
That's so sad that you should say it, because, in fact, we do diagram sentences just for fun. There's a really fantastic app that you can put on your tablet or something, and it's called Sengram. And, yeah, we actually do sit around and diagram sentences for fun. So some people don't do that, but there are all sorts of great educational apps, and I'm taking this off on a tangent. Maybe you want to go here later.
Do it now. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so there are great apps that you can use. There's a wonderful app, and this is part of the process called DragonBox. Everybody who has seen my page knows how much I love DragonBox. It's algebra, but it's algebra in a very theoretical way, and it's a lot of fun. And it's even my 9-year-old is sitting there doing algebra on the tablet. He doesn't know it's algebra, but our 13-year-old is doing the same thing. Except when I work with him, I printed off a PDF form that shows all of the things that he's learning. And, this was called you know, the additive inverse. This is called, there's a whole list of things that Dragon Box covers, and it's a game. And so we do this, and then what I'll do is I'll take a page from an algebra workbook or something, and I'll put out some problems, and I'll say, okay, what would you do if you were faced with this in Dragon Box? And he'll solve the algebra problem without having cracked a book. These things happen, and there's so much of this out there that it's amazing. Children are learning essentially to do things that they want to do, which really surprises me.
So is this the kind of discovery, when you discover apps like these, that you share with people over at the Libertarian Homeschooler?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, I'm not an unschooler. I understand it. I'm okay with people who do it. It seems to have good results in some cases. But I wonder, can this really be for everyone? I can't imagine that all kids could actually follow something like this, and actually at the end of it you find that they are doing algebra and whatever. I mean, could it just be that your experience just happens to be with gifted children?
I'd like to say that, yes. My children are gifted. But I think, was it John Caragata that said genius is as common as dirt? We have to really be able to observe our children and look at them and figure out, okay, where are your sweet spots? Where are you really, really great? And we spend about 80% of our time in that sweet spot, in the place where they're really fantastic. Like my older son, he's an organist. He's a pianist. He sings for the boy choir. So a lot of the things that he does have to do with music. He spends 2 hours a day on the organ, 2 hours a day on the piano, at least 2 hours a day doing choir-related things. But also, music history is very interesting to him. Composition is very interesting to him. Right now, he's reading a book, which you and I would probably think, there's not a chance I'm reading that. It's about the glorious pipe organ and its American masters. Who picks up this book? What 13-year-old child is reading this? If you can allow your child to do what it is that they really love for an extended period of time, I think that you will find that this happens. Now, some children really love a good workbook, so that child should not be discounted. And some children really, really love a curriculum, and that child should not be discounted either. But it really depends on the child. Some of them really want that structure. Every day I sit down at 9 o'clock, I do this thing. So yes, meet that child's needs. Some of them want something completely different. Every day I go into the kitchen and I bake for 3 hours. And maybe that person's going to be a fantastic baker. You don't know. So really following the child, I think, is really important. And like I said, some of them are going to do so well with the curriculum, or so, so well with something very structured. It really depends on the child. But I don't think that we can centrally plan for an individual. And children are individuals. So I really want to follow the individual.
Well, what about this? Suppose you have a student who does seem to be suited to a standard, structured sort of curriculum. Now, here was the question that I was driving at and I didn't fully get to, because I think you and I could just talk for hours, going off on tangents and stuff. But what I wanted to get at, that I think we may have disagreement, but maybe not, would be, would you favor a curriculum that's expressly a libertarian curriculum, or would you feel like that's kind of imposing ideas on the kids instead of letting the kids discover them for themselves?
Well, I would definitely favor a strictly libertarian curriculum. In fact, some of the things that are not, and this is perhaps a little bit too stern, but some of the things that are not negotiable in our home are Austrian economics, political theory. Like right now, my 13-year-old is reading Hans Hermann Hoppe, A Theory of Socialism and Capitalism.
That's a hard book for a 13-year-old, but he'll get something out of it.
We're reading it together. And so we read, and then we read again, and we make sure that we've extracted the meaning out of a sentence, and then we move on. And when he was younger, we read Rothbard. And also, at the same time, right now, we're reading Menger. I don't think that you can deny a child what is true. I don't think that you can deny a child the knowledge that the moon goes around the earth and the earth goes around the sun. And in that exact same way, I don't think you can deny a child the understanding of human action. You can't deny them the understanding of scarcity. You can't deny them the understanding of property rights.
Right.
I think these things are absolutely non-negotiable. They have to know these things.
You know, I'm particularly sensitive to this because, you know, in a minor way, I'm sort of in the public eye because I'm an author and I do a lot of public speaking. And so everybody kind of assumes that my kids are all going to be carbon copies of me. And if that should happen, if it turns out that they agree that their dad is right about things, I'm not going to be sad about that. That'd be great. But I always take care to explain to them that they're entitled to think things through on their own. And they don't have to reach the same answer that I reach to be accepted by me and to be part of the household and be loved and secure. And so I always make that clear to them, even though when they ask me something, what do you believe about this? I give them my answer and I justify it. And typically they do find that it makes some sense. They do understand that they are free to be individuals. And I always want them to understand that. When I was a professor, I always said, do not write in your paper what you think I want you to say. I will give you an A if you take Daniel Webster's view over Abel Upshur's view of the Constitution, even though I like Upshur, if you make a coherent argument, if you have a command of the material. So I've always been sensitive about this, that I don't want to be perceived as forcing something on them. I think of it in terms of I have this wonderful edifice of knowledge here that it took me a lifetime to acquire. And I would just so like to give them a leg up, to give them the chance to read books that I didn't even know about till I was 20 years older than they are now, and just to see their little eyes open so early on, it would just be exciting for me. But also, if they want the other side of the story, all they have to do is pick up the New York Times. They're surrounded by the other side of the story. There's no way I can keep it from them.
Yes, we listen to NPR just to that same purpose, you know. I understand exactly what you're saying. And there is the fear of indoctrinating your children. I think that, for me, the principles of Austrian economics are so, they're just so basic, that it would be like indoctrinating somebody about gravity.
Right, or what a noun is or something.
Correct. There are first principles, and I think you really need to have those in order to understand the world. I don't think that you can really understand history until you've got a really good understanding of human action, property rights. Economics are incredibly important. And so I want to give those to our children before we start talking about history. Because if you can't look at history through the eyes of economics, and I think that's really the lens that's most useful, I suppose, if I had to choose one. How do you know if you're looking at just the court historian indoctrination books?
Right.
You don't. So I think we really have to give that to our children first.
Now, let me ask you just to address one of the most common objections that you get to homeschooling, the socialization objection, that the kids aren't going to know how to interact with other people because they're cooped up all day with one or two other kids, or they're all by themselves all the time, and they're going to be socially inept.
Sure. Let me give a little backstory on that, because that's not such a completely crazy thought. Way back when homeschooling began and people took their children out of school, the choice essentially was to sit at the kitchen table and do school at home. And I've been told this by people who knew homeschoolers way back when. We're first generation in our house. And yes, sometimes people were, you know, that's what they were doing. And so that piece of mythology has a little tiny bit of truth to it. Now, these people who started homeschooling, I can do what I'm doing because they did the legwork. They did all of that difficult work before I could do this. So we're really thankful to them. Also, because of the work that they did, we have tremendous opportunities all of the time. We have homeschool co-ops. We've got homeschool sports. We have, you know, academic classes that we take together. We have my youngest son just performed in The Wizard of Oz. There's so much out there. If you wanted to, you could fill up entire days, weeks, months, years with homeschool activities, and you would never even actually get to be in your house. You could be out of your house all day long, every day. So in terms of socialization, there are so many possibilities. Sometimes we have trouble figuring out exactly when we're going to come home and do what we really feel like we need to do. We've got to get 2 hours of piano, and we've got to leave now so that we can get this done. The other thing that's really exciting is that your children can be with toddlers, with babies. My 13-year-old son, I'm thinking of particularly, he hangs out with children who are younger than his, children who are older than his, but he also hangs out with adults, because we make it our purpose, we make it our point to surround him with adults that are interested in the field that he's interested in. So we're going to, for example, just last week, we were at Mark Thornton's lecture in downtown Atlanta, and my son is there with all of his friends, with whom he can talk about economics or, policy questions. And so he's with adults all of the time. But not only that, when he's, say, at church on Wednesday night singing in the adult choir, there are people there that are in their 60s and 70s. So there's this whole wide array of people, different ages, different demographics, different income levels, religions, creeds, colors. Everybody is available to us. It's not just sitting in a room with people your own age from your zip code. I mean, how unnatural is that to be sitting in a room all day long with kids your age who make the same money that, you know, your parents do and are essentially having all the same experiences that you're having? It's a little bit weird because, you know, only 3% of the children are having this experience. But I think that the socialization is just different as a homeschooler.
Well, one last thing. And this is a practical objection. Don't you need to have at least one parent at home? And isn't that difficult for a lot of families to manage these days?
Some people, what they do is they flip their day. And so what they do is after work, everybody comes home. Children come home from their child care. Parents come home from their work. And they'll devote an hour or two to the basic lesson for the day, for, you know, whatever you're doing, English, math, history, science. And then the next day they go back to their child care situation and they do their homework. And then they do it again the next day. Sometimes homeschooling can be done on the weekends. It can be done at night, and it is done so much faster. I think that about 2.5 hours is the maximum that is needed for the most basic of homeschooling curriculum.
All right, before I let you go, give us the overview of what the Libertarian Homeschooler is all about. You got a huge number of likes on Facebook. People can get there just going to Facebook, typing in the Libertarian Homeschooler, and you can get there directly by typing facebook.com/ what? The Libertarian Homeschooler?
That's it, yes.
Okay, so tell us about it.
Okay, so the Libertarian Homeschooler happened at the same time as, I'm sure you're familiar with this, the Keynes and Hayek rap. Do you remember that?
I sure do.
Well, okay, so at that point, I had just, half a year before, I started listening to Milton Friedman on YouTube. And so he was my gateway drug. I came to Austria by way of Chicago. And I was watching the Keynes and Hayek rap, and I just thought, why don't I know any of this? And I went to Mises.org, and I started reading widely, and really, it was you and Bob Murphy. And it had, my sons would come in and they would listen to you and Bob Murphy lectures. And the reason that we chose the two of you was because our boys really like to hear you all talking.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we started really digging into the Austrian school, into economics, into philosophy, all of that. And I thought, boy, other people really need to know this. So I started the Libertarian Homeschooler. And people are really curious about homeschooling. They've heard about this mythical beast, the homeschooler, and they want to see what it looks like. And that's what we do on the page. You get to see pretty much, you just get a little glimpse into our day-to-day life. And we just look like normal people with our kids all day long. And that, I think, is gives people a lot of hope. It encourages them. It makes them feel like, hey, I can probably do this. You know, if I make mistakes, we talk about that. We say, you know what? Here, I did it again. I still haven't learned this lesson. A lot of it is just practical relationship stuff. But I also like to put up, you know, links to great stuff like Liberty Classroom, which we also love.
Thank you.
There's all kinds of great stuff up there. And there's a terrific list of notes that took a really long time to compile that people can look at on the page. It says Notes, March of 2014. And it goes from towards a libertarian view on the rights of children. And, you know, we look at Rothbard and Hoppe and Walter Block and a few other people, all the way down to a list of books that are really easy to find the libertarian thread in, like The Little Red Hen or Sidwick, The Big-Hearted Moose, things like that. So that's got, it's a sort of a smattering of everything, libertarian homeschooler.
Well, I hope people will check it out. You have quite a flourishing community over there, and I appreciate your time today. You've got a lot of interesting stuff to say. And it's Anna Martin, everybody. The Libertarian Homeschooler is both the website and the Facebook page. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody, I hope you'll check out facebook.com/thelibertarianhomeschooler. A couple notes on my end. Of course, you guys know I have my own site. Anna was kind enough to mention libertyclassroom.com, which is about the most economical site you can possibly imagine, given that we've got, at this point, 9 courses. By the end of the year, we'll have 12 courses. You can listen to them on the go, in your car, etc. You got Q&A forums for our faculty, and it's great. And right now, it's April 2014. It's our 2-year anniversary. And to celebrate that, we are offering 50% off a year's subscription. 50% off? I mean, this is unbelievable. I should be committed for this. How do you get 50% off? You go to libertyclassroom.com, you sign up, and use coupon code DISCOUNT. How simple is that? Coupon code DISCOUNT in all caps. Check that out, because that window of opportunity will close without notice. And if your fingers are in there on that windowsill when that window of opportunity closes, that's going to be painful, my friend. So check that out right away. Of course, you also know that I've been working day and night developing courses for the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum, which you can check out at ronpaulhomeschool.com. I'm doing a bunch of year-long courses. Every year-long course is 36 weeks, 5 lessons a week. That's 180 videos per course that I'm doing. So that's an awful lot of work. But I'm doing Western Civ 1, Western Civ 2, government, which is more or less an anti-government course, and constitutionalism. And yes, I do talk about Lysander Spooner in there, and I do talk about Murray Rothbard in my government course. And basically, we're going to be ready K through 11. Basically, we'll be all set to go by the fall of 2014. Those courses will all be up and running by June of 2014. You can join at any time and get access to that stuff over at ronpaulhomeschool.com. And the idea there is not just to fill the kids' heads with a lot of useful knowledge, although that's great, but also to teach them to convey that knowledge, to be good writers, to be good public speakers, to know how to market themselves, to be able to start a small business. These sorts of things that are not generally taught in school, that are not generally taught in a homeschool curriculum, are absolutely taught in ours. We also have a course on personal finance for teenagers to get them right away in the teenage years accustomed to managing money. I don't know of a program like this. I think this is the most exciting thing I've ever done. So you can check that out at ronpaulhomeschool.com. And to look at the progress I'm making and to look at the 2 courses that I have that are up and running as of this minute, by the fall, all my courses will be up at ronpaulhomeschool.com. But you can look at the lecture titles at tomwoods.com/government and tomwoods.com/Western Civ. Make sure you subscribe to this program. We get great material every weekday for you guys. Look at the guest list we've had. Look at the variety of topics. Make sure you're a subscriber on iTunes or Stitcher by going to tomwoodsradio.com and clicking on one of those little subscription links there. All right, everybody, we'll see you tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Alexander Hamilton, the truth, the awful truth about Alexander Hamilton, with historian economist Tom DiLorenzo. We'll see you then.
The Tom Woods Show.